Good evening. I'd like to call the adjourned meeting of January 3rd to order. Can you hear me, Pat?
Yeah, now we can.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Got your Verizon thing going?
Yes,
first order of business, would you all rise and join me in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Kathy, could we have a roll call of members, please?
Sure. Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
I'm present.
Mr. McKenna? Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chuck?
I am here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera has asked to be excused. Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsey?
Here.
14 members present.
Thanks, Kathy. Because we have a member not in attendance, do we adjourn this meeting again, County Attorney?
No.
No? Okay. Just checking. I'm going to depart from the first order of business for a moment and invite Will Burbank up to do the Distinguished Youth Award presentation. His candidate was unable to attend the last meeting because of illness. So, Will?
Thanks, Frank. And I see Ian has come in, and Joe and Sarah. If you want, folks want to come up front, we're going to put you in the spotlight here for a minute. So first off, I really want to thank everybody for allowing me to interrupt. This was originally scheduled for I just come right to that mic, for December, and Ian was ill that night, so I'm very, very glad we were able to squeeze it in tonight. And I would like to introduce our distinguished youth for December, Ian Sloan, who also uses a different pronunciation name of your last name. Sloan, is it correct?
Sloan,
thank you. And also in attendance is Joe Greenberg, who is principal of the Lehman Alternative Community School, and Sarah Brumberg, who was a science teacher there. And the nomination letter that we got for Ian came from Joe, but I know it was widely shared by staff. I just want to read a little bit. Ian's a young, quiet, reserved gentleman who has seen grow and lead by example, distinguished youth, self-directed learner who never speaks falsely. And I have to say, when I met with Ian trying to have him to tell me about some of the things he'd done, it was like prying stuff out, because he doesn't go on and self-inflate in any sense of the word. He reads and writes with purpose to understand how to change the world to make it a freer, more just place. He could be easily characterized as an anarchist, but is so in a very communal vein. And then Joe lists some of the projects that he's done. I'm going to maybe invite Joe or Sarah to say a few words about some of the things that you've seen Ian do. Joe?
Good evening. Can you guys hear me? So Ian's been a student colleague of mine, a partner in learning at our school for since he was 11. And as Will said, while learning is something that comes naturally to him, showing evidence of it was something he had to work and grow into modeling for himself and for his teachers. Where I've gotten to know Ian as a citizen of the world is through some service projects that I've done with him, most notably 2 years ago in New Orleans. Our school has gone down to New Orleans for 6 consecutive years during our spring trips week in May, and Ian was a worthy member of a relief effort team down there in 2010, I believe. and learned a lot, and I learned a lot about him and his character and his strong work ethic down there. I also know that he's been involved this year, which Sarah could speak to, in a year-long community service class, which commits students to over 100 hours of additional community service hours, plus in-depth study of issues pertaining to their service. So I can turn things over to Sarah in that regard, and then turn things back over to Will.
I'm Ian's family group leader this year, and a little bit involved in the service class, where he's volunteering many hours. Last year, we went to Akwesasne Freedom School together and worked for a week, where Ian is thoughtful on the big issues and on the little issues of keeping the group moving and taking responsibility for what needs to happen around him. Just thoughtful is probably really the best word for him. In the service class, they're volunteering at Gossett, connecting with youth there, and also they have a partnership with some kids in Caroline and talking about Native issues with kids in Caroline, at the Caroline School. So just involved in so many things to make his community a better place and educate the people around him about justice and about the values that he thinks are important.
Thanks, Sarah. And two things that I became aware of. One, Ian was a key part in organizing students at LACS to join the support effort for the dining workers at Ithaca College who were basically not getting adequately paid. And there was a community move of which it came from many, many parts, but LACS was a key part, and Ian helped get people together on that. And more or less spring, Ian was part of a group that marched to Hancock Field in Syracuse to protest the use of military attack drones. And that's a long walk. And the story on that, you may have seen it, Ian was the subject of a column by Anne-Marie Cummings, about his experience there. So, Ian, congratulations. Would you like to say any words or anything about any of those issues? Or you don't have to.
I don't know. It seems
go to the mic.
Yeah, come. Not to put you on the spot here.
Well, I feel like most of what I would say here, if I was going to go and talk about things on those issues, would be perhaps rhetorical or, but yeah, when I read Abby Hoffman, he always said, don't do that. So, but yeah, I'm just happy that the term anarchist was used in a positive way in the courthouse.
It doesn't happen every day, I guarantee you. Anyway, this award we're presenting you is called the Thompson County Distinguished Youth Award, presented to Ian Sloan, in recognition of your outstanding commitment to your community, December 2011, and the sponsors, the folks that make this possible, are Bangs Ambulance Service, the Tompkins County Legislature, Cougar Radio Group, Purity Ice Cream, and A&B Awards and Engravings. And we also have some little things that you can take back and enjoy that go with the award. We thank you very much for joining us, and do come back. And thanks, Joe and Sarah. Okay.
Thanks, Will. Okay. I think we will begin the meeting by resuming where we left off. Just as a reminder, we had a number of tie votes at the last meeting with regard to the chairmanship of this board, of this legislature. The two names that were put forward, pardon me, were Martha Robertson and Michael Lane. Because the meeting was adjourned, and this is a part I'm a little puzzled by, John, you'll have to help me. Is it appropriate to ask if anyone wants to reopen the nominations, or is that foreclosed because we adjourned the meeting?
No, people can reopen nominations at any time.
Okay. Does anyone have an interest in reopening? The two names that have been put forward will remain on the ballot, so to speak. But we're joined tonight by Carol Chock, who was unable to make the last meeting. So in fairness to you, want to give you the opportunity, if you choose, the same opportunity that the other board members had to reopen nominations to nominate anyone else. You don't have to. Okay. Does anyone, Brian?
Well, go ahead and finish.
No, Carol said no. So does anyone want to reopen the nominations? Okay. The nominations will remain, the nominees will remain as they are, Martha Robertson and Michael Lane. Comment? Brian?
Yeah, please. Thanks. And by the way, I think you've done an excellent job for the last 2 weeks. And I thought about, never mind.
Hey, Brian, let me tell you, when I did this a number of years ago, I came real close to having to close the roads in Tompkins County when Bob Howard was the sheriff. And I learned that you'll have every merchant known to man. Not in your corner if you ever close the road. So I was kind of glad that this snowstorm we had melted, believe me. Go ahead, Brian.
Just as a little bit of review, I know we've all had a couple of weeks to think about things. Carol was not here then. 2 weeks ago, I asked each candidate to state a couple of things, and if you don't mind, I'd like to re-ask that same question just as a review, see if there's anything different, so on and so forth. And those actually are, if you could please state your goals for this year, what you see your management style as being, and changes that you would make, if any, to the way business has been conducted in the past or will be conducted in the future. If I could ask that of each candidate again, I'd like to.
Okay. And by the way, thank you for the compliment. I appreciate that. Carol, did you have a comment about Brian's comment?
Yeah. Well, lest everybody think that they need to repeat everything that they said, I want to let people know that I did have occasion to watch the entire meeting. I will say I didn't think when I agreed many months ago to go to Costa Rica with family that I was abandoning you all to 9 votes. That wasn't my intention. I've come back renewed. I can tell you a little bit more about that later. And I did watch the entire tape of the last meeting. I actually watched it more than once, a lot of it, because it kept crashing, and so I kept having to go back and find where I was. So, I'm sorry that this ended up being such a divided legislature, and that there wasn't more discussion in between all those votes. But I was moved by all the nominating speeches. I thank you to Pam and to Dave for outlining Mike's history and leadership over time and during the past 2 years on government operations. I thought that was a good review of his work and strengths, and Mike for what you said, and Pat for researching the history of the role of the chair and reviewing the many ways that Martha's been there for the residents of Tompkins County. especially at the state level, and Nathan, both Pat and Nathan, pointing out the ways in which leadership has been shown. I don't know if I would have gone into quite as much detail as everybody, but I've come to appreciate that it can be very hard to chair meetings of any sort. So the work that they've all done, I've appreciated all of that, and I also was moved in particular by the thoughts that several people offered. That any of us, all of us, each of the 15 of us are leaders in our respective communities, various communities, and that any of us could step up to the chair position given the right circumstances. And so I just wanted to let you know that before you launch into a repeat of what everything that was said before, that I have had occasion to hear it all. So thank you. And I appreciate it in particular your questions, Brian, and how you ask them and frame them.
And in summation, Carol.
Yes.
Oh, I thought you wanted to summarize that.
I would like to be able to. I was surprised at how prominent I was in my absence. A lot, I think it maybe was the only meeting, except for one near the beginning, that I already had a vacation scheduled in 3 years that I'd missed. And we all have occasionally to miss meetings. And I'm sorry that I was so prominent in my absence. So I will vote along with everybody else this time.
Good. It's nice to have you back. Okay, Brian.
Well, just I hope you didn't mean that you wanted to dispense with the questions that I asked, because I think it's important, and let's face it, things do change, could have changed, can change, and as just a refresher, and not to mention that we're out in television land, and there's folks that may not have seen what was going on a couple of weeks ago, and because of the media attention, my guess is that they may be tuning in.
Okay?
Yes.
Okay. The same order that we did it in the past. Martha, would you like to address the comments that Brian has asked that you respond to?
Sure, and I appreciate the questions. And Carol, I don't think that the tape was crashing. It really was, those were the seven votes one after another.
It wasn't really, it was just actually,
it looked like it. But. Just very briefly, goals for 2012. I think many of the challenges of 2011 are going to be with us in 2012. Medicaid, economic development and jobs, fracking. So those are going to stay there, I think, on our list. But I'd like to sort of add a high priority on improving our internal working relations. And I like that phrase, taking responsibility for what happens around us, that we heard in relation to Ian. I think that's a nice way to think about it. I want to make sure that we really focus on that. Management style. I've been told that I take criticism and advice very seriously and learn from it. And I've had plenty of time to talk and think about those things in the last couple of weeks especially. So I've learned a great deal about this job in the first 2 years and want to build on that. And I know I have much more to learn. I think I try to build consensus, making sure all that everybody's views are heard, but then try to figure out when the right time is to move towards making a decision. And I've tried to represent the full legislature's views outside this room, outside our borders. It's easy to talk among ourselves, but it's really important to go beyond that. And changes, I have heard many of the comments from each person here about the ways that we work together. I want to work on that this year. And I think find better ways to work with the committee chairs and for the committee chairs to work with each other. So I've got some ideas about how to do this, to do that in 2012. And I'd like to make that a key focus.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mike?
We hire a manager. That's our county administrator. And we have to give him a lot of authority. However, the board chair needs to work with that person and with all of the members of this legislature to make sure that communication is going in both directions. I think that is part of the management style I'd like to bring. I'd want to make sure that not only what I think ought to be done as one representative, but what all of us or a majority of us think ought to be done is looked at no matter what the policy decision is that we have to discuss. Sometimes there have to be fairly rapid decisions. You close the roads, for example. I don't think the board chair decides that, but those are a rapid decision. But most of the decisions that we have, we can take the time to discuss among ourselves and to discuss them with our department heads and staff and come to the right decision. I think that's important. How I would structure the committees, we need basic committee structures. I'd like to look at whether we need to have more special committees. For example, I would think that our broadband committee ought to be elevated to a special committee rather than a subset of the government operations committee. I think that the changes that we need here are to allow more people the opportunity to become involved with all of the issues that chairs of the committees see and the board chair and vice chair see from time to time. So I think that's important. I think reforming our process here and on the whole, and we started it this year. I know everyone hasn't been terribly pleased with my suggestions for change, but I think it started a good process, which I think will continue in the years to come, and I think it will be better for the public, for the people we represent, when they can see more openly how we select our leadership. My style would not be that I have to be at every committee meeting. There are many chores that the board chair must do, which are outside of the scope of the committee meetings. In other words, whether it's meeting with other municipal officials, state officials, attending NYSAC conference meetings, working on other things that we have, I've done that in the past in my many years as a mayor first and then later as a county legislator and vice chair. I've worked on those kinds of issues and communicated with those kinds of people. So I would bring that experience to bear. And I would also want to make sure that those issues that are so much in the forefront right now, and we talked about, and Martha mentioned Medicaid and certainly the hydrofracking issue and the protection of our aquifers and the water, the protection of our lake from the hydrilla issue and other things like that are so important. And then one thing that I think is really important as well is our commitment to diversity in our workplace, in our workforce. And I think that we talk about it. It's on our letterhead. We have a committee about it. But we need to constantly redouble our efforts toward that improvement to make sure that we are open to everyone and that we have a diverse workplace that's open and welcoming to employees and to members of the public. So those are some of the changes and some of the ways that I would move forward if you folks choose me as chair tonight.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Thank you, Martha. Brian?
What?
Does that address your...
Okay. I heard what was said, yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
Does anyone else, before we call for a vote, or before I call for a vote, does anyone else have a comment? Pat?
A question for clarification. This is for you, Mike. Am I to understand, based on your position that's been stated regarding the need for change and the desirability of change and rotation, that you would change all of the chairs of our standing committees?
I haven't said that. There's some chairs that may have only been in service for a year or so. There may be some committees that have very important issues that the chairmanship needs to continue. But I think we need to think about moving more people into the chairmanships. I've said that not every committee needs to be changed, not every legislator needs to chair every committee. But we need to have a greater variety, a more diverse group over the four-year period that we're elected for.
Can I ask a follow-up then?
You bet.
I'm having a hard time understanding and reconciling what you're saying with what your stated position has been. Because, and maybe you can clarify for us then, I one of the things I just heard you say was that there may be times when there are issues that are very complex or complicated, and a chair, I'm paraphrasing, but a chair has the experience, and it would be wise to continue a chair in that position. So what would the criteria...
For a particular year.
What would the criteria be then?
Well, I think...
Keeping someone or changing someone. I heard you use the term continuity in relation to those issues, so it's just, it seems very fuzzy.
Well, I don't think it's fuzzy at all. I think that now the way that the chairs are selected is by the chair of the legislature making a decision by himself or herself. I think that if we knew that there was going to be change in those positions, we could expect that other people on the particular committees or from other areas in the future might be chairing those positions, and that we don't necessarily have to, and I probably used the word rotate in my initial statement, and I searched for the word that was correct, and I probably didn't find exactly the right word, and I've said that before here, but to change is a good thing. To not change, I think people become in a position, whether it's as a committee chair or elsewise, where they aren't as responsive to the members of the legislature or the members of the public as you might want them to be. I think chairs can help that. And all you got to do is take a look at the state assembly or the state senate, where those folks are elected in caucus to run the leadership for decades. And all they do is consolidate power, and they don't change. And I'm not saying that we're anywhere equated to that kind of what I consider to be difficult situation and undemocratic situation. But I think we can set an example. I think at a level of a county with 15 members to make changes of the people in the chairmanships from time to time, and whether it's every 2 years or every an extra year if someone has a particular problem, or after a year if a person doesn't want to be in that position anymore, any of those things can happen. And I'm not saying that everything is cast in stone. We aren't going to, in my doing this as the chair of the legislature, I wouldn't have a list that say, well, you're this year, and you're next year, and you're the following year. I'm not saying that. I would use my discretion.
Pat, Martha would like to comment on your question. Okay with you?
That's fine.
Actually, I just want to correct something that Mike said. As I wrote in the newspaper today in the guest editorial that we Mike and I were both asked to write on a couple of questions, I can't speak for other chairs before me, but in the last 2 years, Dooley, as vice chair, has worked right side by side with me on all these decisions. She met with me, with each of you, with each legislator, just so the public knows The vice chair was part of those individual meetings where we talked about your preferences and priorities for the year and skills, et cetera. Then together we worked out kind of the spreadsheet of the first iteration of what committees would look like, sent that out to all the legislators. Everybody made comments, and we sent out a revised version, et cetera. So went back and forth a couple of times. So, yeah, in no way did I, you know, do that by myself while I was chair.
Oh, go ahead, Pat.
Thank you. I would just like to point out, especially for people who may not have been at our last meeting or weren't watching it at home, that the research that I did about chair of the committee showed that the longest term for any chair since 1993, when the Democrats took control of the legislature, was 6 years. And aside from that, there was one person who was, I think it was 4 years, 6 years, 4 years, 3 years, and two people who were 2 years. And the average, when you averaged it, was 3 to 4 years. So I don't think we can really compare ourselves to the state assembly or the state legislature. We elect our chair every year, and that seems pretty democratic to me.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay. Last opportunity. You know, I would like to stand up here for another 2 or 3 hours if you want. No. Peter.
Well, I just wanted to say I think that it is a legitimate issue you've raised. I think that the issue has gotten a lot of thought and a lot of discussion over the course of the past couple of weeks. To my mind, the notion that you change all committee members every year is obviously wrong. And what's more, the notion that once a person is appointed to a committee, a person stays on that committee until he dies or leaves the legislature is also wrong. By the way, not everybody thinks that's wrong, because more or less that's the way it works in the House of Representatives. But to my mind, both of those things don't make sense for an organization like us. So I think the right answer is somewhere in between. That's not very helpful, but that's the way it seems to me.
Okay. Thanks, Peter. Leslie, you had a question or comment?
I don't have a question.
Advice.
I have a comment. I want to appreciate both Mike and Martha for stepping out and putting their names out for the chair of this legislature. It is not an easy job. It's not a difficult job, and over the last few years, you know, there's been a lot of work done, even beyond what other chairs have done. One of the things I appreciate most about this process is I've been on this legislature, like many of you, for a number of years, and have seen the vote for chairmanship go down over the years based on decisions that were already made. It's just been that way. It's been, you know, with all due respect to my colleagues, I'd say one-sided that has happened. So it's great. I'm saying that to say that it's great to have both of you stepping out and having this vote happen here and giving people the opportunity to comment, to listen to both of you, and to make our minds up based on our experiences with you and based on the things that you are saying in terms of your goals. Mike, I hear what you've said about change, and maybe I'm understanding it differently from what other people are understanding. I did not hear you say that we're just going to change people just for the sake of changing people. But what I do hear is giving other people the opportunity to step into the roles of chairing committees and subcommittees, et cetera, if that's their desire, and helping people to grow to make it their desire to want to consider those things. So I appreciate hearing that. Martha, the things that you have done and have said you want to continue to do, I appreciate hearing that, because I know that you work very hard, and I know that you will continue. So thanks to both of you for putting yourselves out there. I wish that I had the time to be able to chair this legislature, because I would put myself out there. But having a full-time job and a very young family, a teenager who I will kill as soon as I leave here. So where's the sheriff, Market? It's graduation year for him, and he's trying to make more gray hairs grow. I know that, you know, I can't afford to do that, but I hope that others in this body will see the opportunity. No, we don't have to be former chairs who had lots of time and you know, can do things, or others who didn't. We just need to be ourselves and be able to step into this role and do it to the best of our ability. So, again, I just want to thank you all for putting yourselves out there, and thank you for sharing your ideas and your visions as I understood them.
Thanks, Leslie. Anyone else? Okay. I think we will proceed with a vote for the chairmanship of this legislature. We'll do it by a show of hands, as we did in the past. And the first name on the nominee list is Martha Robertson. All those in favor of Martha, please raise your hand. 9. There's no need to go any further. Martha, congratulations.
Does that mean that the record will reflect the other half of the vote, since you didn't call for that? It will.
Is that
Thank you.
Yes. 9-5.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Frank. It's been an interesting couple of weeks, and I look forward to working extremely hard with all of you for the next year, and we have a lot of opportunities in front of us. Let's make the most of them. The next item of business is an election of vice chair. So I think the floor is open for nominations. Nathan.
I'd like to nominate Jim Dennis for vice chair of the Tompkins County Legislature.
All right. Is there a second? All right. That fails for lack of a second. Am I correct?
Actually, elections.
Second. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh.
I was asleep.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I will say this. Actually, nominations don't really need a second. We traditionally do that, but they don't really need a second.
Oh, okay. Really?
For elections, yes.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. But in any case, Nathan and Peter are on record here. Did you want to make some remarks first?
Oh, yeah, sure, absolutely. I've had the pleasure of working with Jim Dennis for the past 6 years now. And through and through, he has been an absolute leader that's dedicated tremendous time and energy to this organization. You can see that in a lot of the thankless jobs that he does. I mean, looking at, one big example is the countless number of hours that he has spent over the past 6 years. I would venture to say hundreds, maybe hundreds and hundreds of hours that he spent on labor negotiations, working with personnel, and administration on these very difficult negotiations in very, very tough times. And that takes a tremendous amount of energy. I know I wouldn't be able to do it. I know a lot of us, too, here wouldn't have the time as well to do it. But Jim has dedicated that time in a very thankless task and has done an exceptional job for us. Obviously, Jim has been a leader on the leading us through a very difficult budget time. The past 2 years, we've seen a real economic collapse in this country, and even though those effects haven't been as strong in Tompkins County, they were still big enough to have an effect on our revenues, especially on the state side. And Jim, again, has shown leadership there. So if you look back, Jim, in his 6 years, has really shown that he has the leadership ability and the perspective to be an excellent vice chair and to help you, Martha, as chair, craft what the agenda is alongside with us, all of us, what the county is, work with us on finding new committee chairs, et cetera. So I think Jim is a fantastic candidate and a very clear choice for vice chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Nathan. Peter, did you want to say anything as a second?
No, I think Nathan has said it well.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other nominations? Dooley.
I think it's important to consider who is chair when you nominate someone to be vice chair. And my initial thought with the close split between Mike and Martha at our last meeting was that that would be the ideal pair to work together. One year one would be chair, the next year the other would be vice chair, and vice versa. I know that Mike is not interested in being vice chair this year, so I won't nominate him. But I think it's important when you nominate someone that there be some complementarity. They shouldn't be too similar. With that in mind, I nominate Will Burbank, whose generally quiet demeanor comes with a thoughtful, deliberate, and analytical intelligence.
Thank you, Dooley. And since I asked for a second before, is there a second for Will, for Will's nomination? Carol, did you want to make any remarks?
No, I would make similar remarks to Dooley. I also think that it's important to think in terms of balancing, and that I particularly value Will as somebody who sits back and really listens, as and then thoughtfully comments. Almost never remarks that the rest of us have already said. And so I think he really adds a lot to the discussion, and I think he'll make a very good vice chair to Martha's chair.
Thank you, Carol. Pat?
I would like to nominate Peter Stein for vice chair. In the 2 years that we've served together here on the legislature, I have talked with Peter and watched as he has shown a really, really keen interest in all of the issues that come before us as a legislature. And I am aware that he goes to many, many meetings of committees of which he is not a member, just to sit in on the meeting and learn about the issues and learn about what's going on. And I think it would be difficult to find anyone in their second year on the legislature who's managed to give themselves as broad and as deep an education about the various issues that we have to deal with as Peter has. His intellect has been brought to bear during our budget season as he took a close look at some of the issues that we had to deal with and was able to come forward with some suggestions as to how we might manage different aspects of the budget. And I think that kind of, and I agree about the need for balance. I think that Peter also would be a good person, a good counterpoint for our chair next year. And I think that he would definitely be an asset in the leadership of the legislature.
Thank you, Pat. Is there a second for Peter's nomination? Jim?
I will second.
All right. Are there any other nominations? Brian.
Can I nominate everyone else?
Everybody should settle in for a long night.
I heard what Dooley said, and I very much agree that it's healthy to have different personalities, different views. I'm going to nominate Frank Proto. That's an obvious difference. But beyond that, let's face it, he is the senior person here. He's chaired committees for a long time. Is very... is very deep in whatever it is that he gets into. I think he would compliment you well. I think it would be a service to this legislature. And out of respect for him, I would very much like to nominate him.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Is there a second? Dave? Thank you. Okay. Are there any other nominations? Leslie?
It's a question of protocol. Can you nominate people who are not here?
Yes.
Jonathan?
Yes.
Oh. So, if you want to talk about difference and different views and different personalities, I'd like to nominate Kathy Lou Cerrera, the vice chair of the Tompkins County Legislature.
All right. Is there a second? Pam seconds that. All right. Any other comments from either of you?
Raise your hand if you haven't been nominated.
I'm right here.
Well, are there any other nominations? I need to ask.
I know. God.
Anybody feel hurt that they haven't been nominated? I would ask for a motion to close nominations if there are no others. Pat?
Move that we close nominations.
Second that. All right. All right. All in favor of closing nominations, please raise your hand. That looks unanimous. Okay. All right. Nominations are closed. So we will vote in. Carol?
I have a question about sort of process. Do we need to get to a certain number of votes? So is it a majority among the ones nominated, or do we need to get to eight?
Yes.
Eight. So we'll have runoff votes. Is there a way that we...
The way is you just you keep voting until you find someone. Someone could open up nominations again to add additional people, but the only way to really resolve it is to keep voting if they're not...
Somebody could withdraw.
Yeah, anybody can withdraw. I mean, people can withdraw their names.
And at some point somebody could make a motion to do it some other way to that we discuss as to whether we want to vote among the... top vote-getters, or?
No, I don't think that's possible. Okay. I think once somebody's been nominated, they're nominated.
Thank you.
We've practiced this. We know how to vote multiple times. Mike?
Yes. We haven't had any of the current people who've been just been nominated announce their interest prior to this meeting. I would certainly like to hear from each of them.
All right. Brian?
I know that's not a motion, but I would certainly, that's what I was going to ask.
Okay. Then in the order nominated, so Jim, Will, Peter, and Frank. And Leslie, if you want to speak for Kathy, I suppose.
So Will, for her, but I'll speak for why I nominated her.
Okay. All right. Jim.
Thank you, Martha. Congratulations on your election. Thank you, Nathan, for the kind words. And... I looked up the duties of the vice chair this afternoon from the code, and it says that it shall include all duties and functions of the chair, excluding the appointment of members of standing committees. So that's one job you don't have. And you do take over in case of disaster or attack. And I'm not certain if that means from another county or another country. But at any rate, having had no military experience, I'm sure I could respond correctly if I were the vice chair and the chair was, you know, in Albany talking to those people, which is necessary all the time. Let me just say some of the positive things I think I've been able to do in 6 years here. I've chaired a committee every year I've been here. I've chaired the budget committee for 2 years, which is basically the whole legislature. I've been criticized for cutting people off, shutting people down during meetings, and I will admit to that. But I'm a results-oriented person, and we're talking about a $160 million budget, and we have to get to the end of it. We have a deadline, and we have to do it. And I think... you know, if my mother were viewing me, she would have said I was rude to people. And I agree at times. But I think, you know, hopefully people overlook those things and look at the final product. The final product was we ended up with two budgets with an extremely bad economic time. I think the role in terms of assisting the chair, Martha and I do not agree on all our politics, and there are many instances of that during the last 5 years that I've been here. So for those who think that I would just be another yes person to the chair, I think you're not giving me enough credit for knowing the other view that I could bring to the table and have brought to the table, unbeknownst to some of you. I could certainly assume the duties to run a meeting, and I would enjoy doing it if given the opportunity. And I don't, and frankly, I don't view it as a stepping stone to be the chair. I have a perfectly good life with my grandchildren. I love them. I love to visit them. Being the chair of this legislature is a full-time job, and I am not, one of my goals is not to end up there. I would love to serve as vice chair for a year and, you know, hand it off to someone else if the time came for this.
Thank you, Jim. Will.
Thank you, Martha, and congratulations. Were I vice chair, I would curtail some of my natural inclination to deliver long speeches. I promise I will not bore you to death with speaking. You guys know me as a relatively quiet person. Kind of my approach is that I actually try to see the good in people. There are things I like about every person on this body, and sometimes that's not all that easy, but that has been what I do. Like Jim, I do not aspire to be chair. I don't have long-term goals, but if elected, I will take this job very seriously, do it to the best of my duty. Hope that I never have to stand in Martha's place, but know that I could if need be. And I thank Dooley and Carol for the nomination.
Thank you, Will. Peter.
Okay. Well, I anticipated such a question, so I wrote down some things and let me talk about them. First, congratulations also, Martha. And I have to repeat the last thing that my two predecessors said to make it the first thing. I, too, have no ambition to be chair. In General Sherman's famous words, if nominated, I will not run. If elected, I will not serve. Not that I would have felt the same way 20 years ago, but given my place in life now, I think I have no interest in spending the amount of time it takes to be a chair. As to the obligations of chairing a meeting, I bet I've chaired more meetings than anybody else in this room. I made a specialty of that at Cornell. I was on thousands of committees, chaired lots and lots and lots of meetings, chaired meetings of the university faculty, which is much more contentious than meetings of this legislature, and was known to be good at that job. The word communication has come up. I think of that as an important part of this job. I have heard statements made, they may be true, they may not be true, I don't know because I've never been in the meetings before, that not everything that got said in the meetings came down to the meetings that the chair has with the county administrator, not everything came down to the legislators themselves. I don't know if that's true, but I can assure you if I were the vice chair, that would not be true. I believe in communicating with you. One of my disappointments on in being on the legislature is that there isn't more informal communication between the members. I served on the Ithaca Town Board for 6 years, and we had lots of informal meetings. We used to meet for lunch, two of us at a time, at Cafe DeWitt. And I really look forward to those meetings. I know that a couple of ideas that I've had, I did come around and talk to everybody on the legislature to get their views about what I was thinking, and did that on a number of occasions. I like that part of the job, and I would do it. I'm independent. I think that's important. I value my independence. I've said to more than one of you once, the message that guides me in life is the famous
statement by, I believe, Bill Clem, an umpire, a famous umpire in baseball, who asked, what does it take to be a good umpire? Why are you a good umpire? Something like that. He looked him straight in the eye and he said, I calls them like I sees them. And I believe that. I calls them like I sees them. Whether people like it or they don't like it, that's my formula for my own independence. I'm energetic. Since I've been on the board, I have stuck my nose into 100 different places where it was not invited. I've found things. I've made comments. I've brought ideas, I think. And I'm very much interested in the operation. I'm energetic. I have the time. I'm retired. And I've spent a lot of energy doing that. I have a record of a number of initiatives that I've made. I think that I would serve you well in this position. I've got a last thing, but I can't read it, so let me end. Thank you. Well, my handwriting is quite bad, actually.
Then you can't be vice chair if your handwriting is bad. Les, and I have Frank next.
Go ahead.
Okay. Frank.
Thanks, Martha, and congratulations as well.
Thank you.
One thing vice chair is not is co-chair of the legislature. I have been vice chair in the past, albeit it was under a Republican majority. I've been vice chair a couple of times, four or five. I think a lot of you, or most of you, know that I can be a pretty good listener. I don't think that this is a position where you go out and put yourself out. It means that you have to work closely with the chair, with the administration, and your reserve material. You will only be called on if the chair is unable to do whatever it happens to be, whatever the issue happens to be. Just as an example, one of the times that I was vice chair, under Mary Call, Mary had to have an operation, and I had to stand in for several weeks while she recovered. That was one of the times where there's some ministerial duties that you have to do, sign this and sign that. I'm sure Martha goes through that, or any chair of the board would go through that. In addition to that, I did have to ride with Bob Howard in those days and Jack Miller about looking at closing roads. We had a very serious situation back then, and we had to make a decision on whether or not we would close the roads. I have time, but a lot of that, again, would be dependent upon what it was that the issue called for. I don't know that we'd have to act in an emergency if Martha was in Albany or in Cortland or something and something came up, you're a phone call away. You wouldn't want to usurp or even give someone the impression that you were usurping someone's power or authority. That's not the role of the vice chair. It's simply to step in the event that the chair cannot act. And that's the capacity that I was in before. I've tried to be cordial to all of you and listen well. I don't want to get into running meetings. We all can run a meeting, and sometimes they run better than other times, but a lot of that depends on the topic. I'd like to be vice chair because I think in this case it would present a contrast. This board often likes to pride itself on contrast. And what it can do and what it can't do and how different opinions get put forward. I don't think the vice chair should be out there promoting their own point of view because it would depend on what the county's need is. And that's one of the concerns that I have had, that we need to make sure that the county's best interests are served. And that would mean working well with the chair. I mean, you know, Martha and I from time to time spar on the floor here. Guess what? I've watched each one of you occasionally spar with the chair. That happens because there is a difference of opinion, and that's healthy. It doesn't mean that you dislike each other. I think Will put it actually very well, that I don't think any one of us vehemently dislike each other. We tend to work together, even though Leslin and I have a bout coming up at GIAC. So I'd certainly try to serve you well. I would work with Martha well, and I think I would present a contrast, not Democrat and Republican. I think it's good to have different ways of looking at things, and both of us come from different backgrounds. All of us come from different backgrounds. It's a good idea to, from time to time, sit down and see what you think. I think Peter said that as well. It's a good idea to sit down and try to draw on others' experience. And having said that, I think I will end there. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank.
And Brian, thanks for the nomination.
Leslin.
Thank you, Martha. So, Peter, I appreciate I calls it like I sees it, because that's Kathy Luz Herrera. You know, despite the eye rolling and everything else, one of the things I appreciate about Kathy is the fact that she is very real. She's very real. She's very down to earth. She is somebody who often will remind us of the things that we might have forgotten for why we were elected. Kathy is very, very keen on detail and very keen on looking for the areas where sometimes we overlook. And she names them, she calls them. And she also has been very instrumental in helping us make some of the changes because she's brought to her attention some of the things that we have done that weren't quite flying at the level that they should be. And so she was very keen about saying to this body of people, you need to check what it is that you're doing. And we have done some of those things. Minutes, for example. So I appreciate the fact that Kathy provides the kind of contrast that I'm looking for, one that really speaks to human life, human quality, working class issues, one that speaks to building an organization that is inclusive. Now, we may not appreciate always her communication style, because that's not our style, but that's hers. And just like sometimes we don't appreciate others, but that's yours. But she brings the level of realness and the level of looking into detail and skepticism that I think make us often stop and think about what it is we're doing and if that's the right direction in which we're going. And that's why I felt inclined to say, if not me, who would I think would do that? And that's Kathy. And despite the fact that many people think that we're joined at the hips, we're not. Kathy and I all often differ on our votes and our views, but lots of times what she has to say and the decisions and votes that she's taken will show itself later on as the right way to go. So I appreciate her work. I'm sorry she's not here to speak for herself. I didn't know she was not going to be here. So I just wanted to share that with you. There are a couple of other things just in listening to my other colleagues and the nominees speak to this position and the position of chair that I want to bring up, and I'll bring it up again at another point. So there are phrases like, you know, retired and have the time, it's a full-time job. That is not one of the things that I understood or recognized was the job of either chair or vice chair of this legislature, that it was such a full-time job. Because if you make it that, then people like me would never be able to serve in that position, and that troubles me. We pride ourselves on this body in saying that we don't want to have a body where common folk, working class folk can't serve, can't run for office and serve because we create these, either the legislature requires so much of your time. We say this is a, I don't know how many hours a week job. And people say, oh, yeah, I can balance that. But if we say that the other two executive level positions of this body has suddenly risen to that, and we make it that, then we're excluding a whole group of people who may not be able to do that, and that I hope we can continue to have conversation around and make sure that's not the message we're sending. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. So we've heard from each candidate or their nominator. Mike?
I wonder if I could ask another round-robin question here, and that is, why have the folks that are on the floor now as candidates for vice chair not wanted to make their interests known prior to this to the public?
Does anybody want to answer that question? Jim?
I practically didn't think anyone would care if I put my name out or the rest of us running for vice chair. There was so much discussion about the chair's job. It made it in the newspaper. Both candidates had to respond. I think once a person finds out what the vice chair's job is, I'm not certain that anyone was really concerned about that. People in my district were concerned about who the chair was going to be. They were not that concerned about who the vice chair was going to be.
Peter?
Yeah, I pretty much agree with Jim. If I had decided to announce it, I have no idea exactly how I do it. I think if I released a press release, it would go down laughing. It's really, I don't want to, I don't want to diminish a job that I would like to serve in, but if I were on a newspaper, I would not think of that as a worthy piece of news, except if it was a very, very boring day.
Anyone else? Frank?
Yeah, Mike, I think, I don't know that any of us have, I don't want to speak for the other individuals, but I don't know how much thought has gone into being vice chair. You distributed a letter early indicating your interest in chairman, being chairman, and I think Jim is on the right track, that the public probably has been spending more time concentrating on that. I've probably had more calls, and some of you have too, from constituents about the chairman's position. I think until this evening, the opportunity to provide a contrast to whoever the chair is probably stimulated some interest in this position. I don't think there was anything surreptitious by any one of the five candidates to avoid letting the public know.
Can I just say I agree with you, Frank? Thank you. That's kind of the motivation also behind my thinking and my nomination.
Yeah. Well, will that leave you? Anything to say?
Only that, quite frankly, my thinking, Mike, was going to be informed by the election of chair, and I do really see us trying to complement that person, whomever that might be. And I would imagine everybody will sort of be thinking of that as we move toward a vote.
Are we ready to do that? All right. I have five names. I'll read them in the order they were nominated. And just raise your hand for one. Thank you. All right. Jim Dennis, the first candidate. In favor of Jim Dennis. That would be two. All right, that would be two. The next candidate is Will Burbank. Four. Peter Stein. That's two. Frank Proto. One, two, three, four, five. Five. Kathy Luz Herrera, one. So, thank you. Does that add up to 14?
think it does? All right. Okay. So we have, I don't know if we can have any more nominations, but so we have five candidates. Are there any, is there any motion up there? I'll just wait for people to think about it a minute. Do you want me to read the numbers off again?
Yeah.
Was that a yes?
Yeah.
Two for Jim Dennis, four for Will Burbank, two for Peter Stein, five for Frank Proto, one for Kathy Lucera. Mike?
The process of tabling to the next meeting seemed to work. I was elected a chair this time. And I will therefore move to table to the next meeting.
Is there a second? And then I have a question for Jonathan.
Move
well,
to
that is about to die for lack of a second. Or, all right, let me ask the Jonathan question first. After this matter is either disposed of or adjourned or whatever, I will close the meeting of the January 3rd legislature meeting, and then open up the January 17th legislature meeting. Correct?
Yes.
So, Mike, would that mean that you would be postponing it until, you know, a half hour from now or something?
No, I postpone it until the next regular meeting.
February 6th? 7th? Okay, so that is the motion. Is that a question or a second?
No, it's a point of order.
Okay.
I think the appropriate motion is to postpone, not to table. Table is a different motion. It's non-debatable. It ought to be debatable. And it's because some urgent piece of business has arisen that must be taken care of. So if I could just suggest that you change the motion to postpone.
Happy to postpone to the next meeting. And I think the urgent business is our regular meeting that should be held tonight.
Is there a second for the motion to postpone until February 7th? Jim seconds that. Jonathan, is there a discussion on that?
There can be a discussion on a motion to postpone, but not a motion to table.
Well, it's a motion to postpone. So, Carol, then Will, then Pat.
I'll make the point that I believe Peter made at the last meeting, which is that I might get to a point where I'd be willing to postpone, but I guess I'd like to see us take at least a couple of more votes first to see if we can at least narrow it down a little bit.
Yeah.
People may have come in with commitments.
And I know the Broadband Committee is really here, you know, just for this purpose. But all right, Will, Pat, then Mike.
Question for Jonathan. Jonathan, were we to leave it as is, where we have elected a chair but do not have a vice chair, and in the unlikely event that something were to happen to Martha, what would be the secession order? Or would we just have to have another election?
That's a good question. In my view, the current vice chair would continue as vice chair. Because unlike with the chair, where you nominated a temporary chair, we've not nominated a temporary vice chair. So that's what I think would happen.
Think about the extra money, Julie.
Pat and Mike.
Well, you already mentioned, Martha, what I was going to say. I'd just like to reiterate that I understand the importance of this election, and I don't want to in any way take away from that. But we do have a group of people here tonight from the Broadband Committee who are waiting for our presentation. So I just ask you to think about that.
Mike.
I would just also point out in support of my own motion that if we came back, perhaps the missing candidate would be able to be with us.
Okay. Is there any other discussion? So, Pam.
Well, and perhaps the field would be reduced during the interim, the negotiations and the consolidation of support. That would be nice.
I would make one. Any other discussion? If I can make one comment, that I think we need to move on the process that we usually do of meeting together and talking about committees for 2012, and should we not do this election until February, I would move ahead with Dooley on that task. I think it's a real problem to delay into the middle of February before we can appoint committees. Peter?
I feel very strongly about that. I think you should go ahead and do it. I find myself in sort of a state of limbo and not knowing exactly what to do in this interregnum. And so, please, let's not hold that process up by this.
Okay. Any other discussion? The motion is to postpone until, tell me again the date, February 7th?
February 7th,
next regular meeting of the legislature. All in favor of that motion, please raise your hand. Opposed? That passes 12 to 2. Okay. All right, then, there being no other business of the January 3rd meeting of the legislature, I get a motion to adjourn. Moved by Pat, seconded by Will. All in favor of adjourning? Any opposed? January 3rd meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature is adjourned. I'd like to call to order the January 17th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature.
Don't we have to, do we have Pledge of Allegiance again, or did
well,
the last one last?
Why not? Everybody stretch. We've been here an hour and 15 minutes. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Totally ridiculous.
I pledge allegiance to
the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Committee, we're going to get through the next part really quickly. So roll call of members. I guess, yeah. Nobody, you just want to say nobody left? Roll call of members.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robinson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Still here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Vera has asked to be excused. Ms. Keeper?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsey?
Present.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
14 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
We will reorder business of the meeting so that the presentation of the broadband committee can come as soon as possible. So I first will ask for, are there any members of the public who would like to speak to us tonight? Okay, just the broadband committee, I think. All right. And with permission of the legislators, if we could, should we do legislative privilege of the floor after the broadband committee?
Yes.
Okay. So let me ask, with that, let me ask Pat Pryor and Dave McKenna, as chair and vice chair of the broadband committee, to take it away. Folks back there hear me okay? Okay. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
This is an exciting time for those of us that are on the broadband committee. Our group has been working for about 15 months, and we are very happy to be able to bring our presentation to you this evening. For those of you who don't have a copy of the report in hand, or who are home watching this on television, I'd like to point out that it has been posted on the county website. If you go to the link for the legislature and on the legislature page, there you will see that there's a link to the broadband report. And I believe the interim report is also still there. I'm going to be doing the introductions here tonight, and I'd like to first of all introduce Dave McKenna, who has been the vice chair of the committee.
I want to thank you, Dave, for your service. The two of us have really worked closely together on this, and it's been a real pleasure to work with Dave on this committee. So thank you, Dave. We have a number of members of the Broadband Committee who are not able to be here tonight, and for a complete list of the members of the committee, you might want to look on page 18 of your report. What I'm going to do now is introduce those members of the committee that are here this evening. I want to preface my introduction by saying how much I've come to appreciate the dedication of these community volunteers who've spent literally hundreds of hours working over the past 15 months to bring the work of this committee to this point. Committee members' dedication to equity for all county residents through the opportunity for high-speed or broadband access to the Internet is the core principle that has guided our work and continues to define our goal. I'd also like to point out that for those of us on the committee, you might notice that we have not said that this is a final report. We see this as a recommendation to the legislature, but we also understand very clearly that this is only the first step in a process. And if we are to, as a county, provide for all of our residents of Tompkins County, we will, as a legislature, have to decide what the next steps are after this report has been presented. And it may very well be that we will begin to think in terms of partners that we might work with. It could be members of TCOG or whatever to take the steps that will be needed to actually implement some of the things from this committee work. In addition to the committee members, I'd like to acknowledge the contribution of various staff members who've contributed their expertise to our work. A full list of their names starts on page 21 in your report. I'd like to particularly recognize Andrea Gibbs for her support in keeping records, organizing logistics, preparing agendas, etc. And a huge thank you to Paula Younger for her organizing skills, her attention to detail, for making arrangements for all of our guest speakers, and in general for her professionalism and competence in supporting the work of the committee. As I call the names of the committee members that are here this evening, would you please just stand up so we can see who you are? I think I know that John Bosak is here. Where's John? John is not here. Okay, I'm sorry. Thought he was. Oh, okay. Thank you. Sorry. Susan Curry is here. Rick Dietrich. Mike Pliss. Vic Rendano. Gary Reinbold. Herb Sheldon. Ed Swayze. And have I missed anybody? It's here in the room. Lastly, Larry Berger. Larry is going to present our report this evening. I think it's particularly appropriate for him to do this because, in addition to being a committee member, Larry is, in a very real sense, a client of this committee. He lives in a place in Tompkins County that does not currently have broadband access to the Internet. So with that, I'm going to turn the presentation over to Larry. Time permitting, we'll entertain some questions at the end. Thank you.
Larry, if you want to sit down, we can also... Are you going to move the presentation along?
Yeah.
Because we can sit down... Where's the small mic?
Lower the
microphone. There you go. Thank you. Do we want to turn the lights down?
Let's see. So. Good evening, and from all of us, thank you for allowing us to address this issue and present our work to you. If you think that I'm moving along quickly, we have a lot to get through, and I do have a tendency to babble and speak quickly, so if you have to slow me down, slow me down. We often take, for what Pat said, when we talked about putting together the presentation, since I don't have internet access at my house, it's made this a challenging process. So we have a relatively simple presentation, not lots of bells and whistles, but we want you to absorb the meat. So we often take the use and availability of broadband for granted. And tonight we're going to talk about this. And we're going to cover our committee, the objective we had, the work and our accomplishments, the process we went through in collecting, reviewing, and analyzing information, what we found and uncovered, defining broadband, technical solutions we considered, our recommendations for which technical solutions to use, how to fund deploying broadband and funding models that we considered, and talk about next steps. So, our charge, to quote, was to advise the Tompkins County Legislature on how best to promote the broadband technology countywide, to address the needs of unserved and underserved residents, foster public and private innovation, enhance existing capabilities, and support good governance. As part of that, what we did is we focused on economic development, government performance, public safety and emergency medical services, in-home health care, education, energy and environment, rural broadband access, and civic engagement. What we found early on is we needed to dimension the issue. There was a lot of discussion about that, and we realized pretty quickly that we needed to define really what was broadband or what is broadband. And the nice part of that was we had such a vast, wonderful depth of experience on our committee that we actually had to avoid, they were so familiar with using the internet that we had to avoid some of our personal biases, except for me. What we did was we had a regular series of guests come in that addressed information technology, education, government. Some of these included Thomas Ball from Cornell, who spoke to us about cellular evolution and 4G. David Sawway from the New York Enterprise Program and Broadband Management Office spoke to us about federal and state initiatives. Joe Starks with ECC Technologies gave us an overview of broadband expansion in our region. Paul Griswold and Jim Bass came in from Finger Lakes Technology Group and discussed fiber and how it's deployed throughout central New York. We had Dr. Brown from the superintendent of the Ithaca City School District come in. And Chuck Bartosh presented from Clarity Connect presented us his analysis and a gap map. We also looked at information from the Regional Economic Development Council. And we had a listserv set up where we had regular communication for the committee members. And believe me, we got loads of emails with lots of links and a lot of discussion and a lot of iteration back and forth as we worked through the process. What we found were a number of things, some of which surprised us, some of which didn't. One of the things that was a bit surprising is that, unlike what you may see elsewhere, and I'll get to it, there's over 4,700 households in Tompkins County without broadband. It's a much greater number than what the state says and what the feds identified. As far as speed goes, we had a number of things that we looked at, and we sort of debated, you know, what does somebody need? Do they need to play games? Do they need to, you know, do schoolwork? And then we came to what a speed should be when we defined it, which I'll get to in a bit. But what came up through the process is in a self-selected survey, an overwhelming number of respondents in Tompkins County indicated that high-speed internet access is highly important to them. Just going through some of the rest of these, and I don't want to diminish them. We had so many bullet points that I really wanted to just kind of talk about them, and I won't read to you. I'll let you read. But we found that our education needs are continually changing. I have three kids in school, and from the time I started this process to now, it's drastically changed. Things like they get their homework assignments online. They have to hand things on online. That wasn't the case before. Before, I was just a bad dad for not having the internet. From a continuing education perspective, in my profession and a lot of the people's professions, we require regular continuing education, professional certifications. It makes it a real drag if you can't do it at your home. Applying for colleges. My oldest is now getting to that point. That's getting a little scary. When you're looking at medical and health care, there's a variety of things that we haven't seen yet that we're starting to see is going to happen. In my words, Skype visits with your doctor, with your medical practitioner, so you don't always have to go in. As far as participation in government, there's a lot of interactive communication or community issues, and being able to express those needs and see what the rest of the community is talking about that we tend to overlook. When it comes to applying for a job, if you've ever tried or you know of anybody who's tried to go to Cornell's website on a smartphone, it's a lot of fun. You just, you know, all job applications now are online. As I was practicing this week and going through some things and telling my kids, hey, we're going to have this presentation, my youngest, who's 10 years old, just came home with a math sheet giving us a ID and a user for him, a user ID and password for him, because now he's got online math games to help improve his math. And it's just like, okay, here's one more thing. Let's see. There's informational videos that people look at for home maintenance managing medical files with different providers. If you've ever tried to get your files transferred from one doctor to another, it'd be a lot easier. In-home businesses, telecommuting, shopping for goods and services. One of the things I've heard over the last year or I've noticed is how many people don't necessarily order from Amazon because so many things need to be returned, but they much prefer to shop online and then pick it up at one of the local stores. Then if it needs to be returned, it's a much easier thing to deal with. Services the same way. I've gotten in such a habit in my office when I need to look for something, it's hard to find the phone book. I just do everything online right away. At home, it's not as easy. Once you get past the ideas of games and entertainment, the different and expanding list of uses is really quite amazing. And we realize that it's really important not to judge how somebody should use it. So, for example, we started in the beginning with, well, you know, somebody doesn't need to be able to play their online video game. Over time, we started to see so many uses that we realized it's really critical to our quality of life in Tompkins County. So I actually thought I would be standing near the screen, so it's going to be a little harder for me. But right above Mr. Pliss's head, the map on the left is what the state and the feds show as broadband in Tompkins County. And it's done via census. So that little bit of orange in Danby right above his head, and then there's a little bit in about 8 o'clock, yep, in Enfield. Believe it or not, those are the only places that don't have broadband in Tompkins County, according to the feds. The map on the right was done locally by Chuck Bartosh's group at Clarity Connect. And that's a much more accurate view, particularly since I know my house shows up here. And roughly 25% geographically of the county is either underserved or not served at all. And this is showing, we refer to this generally as the gap map. So all the areas in purple there are actually the areas that don't have broadband access. So as I said, we talked a lot about what actually is broadband. And we came to a minimum acceptable capacity of 6 megabytes per second. That's both upload and download. This is conforms with the anticipated FCC standards. We went with the FCC's definition. It satisfied many of the other things that we looked at. So adopting this standard seemed to me, the way our committee took it, was like a big rock in the pond. One of the things we found is, aside from being able to work for a number of the different uses, that it facilitates, having that standard facilitates applying for grants and funds and going forward that way to be able to get funding.
Yeah, please mention the name of that fund.
Universal Service Fund?
Thank you.
Oh, my God. That's an inside joke.
Okay. Well, it should be universal.
No, some of us. Anyway, we won't go there right now.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
A couple of things. One is, it was
Peter, please use your mic.
It was my understanding that you can actually get broadband via satellite. Is that correct or incorrect? Anybody can get...
Well, you can, and we can. There's people here who can speak to it better than I can. But in short, it's really expensive and not very functional when you're trying to use it on a regular basis. Part of what happens, and I apologize to the technical people on our committee, is you get a big time lag delay because what you transmit up to the satellite and then it has to go back down to where it's being served from and then come back again. So you get a time lag of your responsiveness. And when it comes to using interactive
apps... And that's more than seconds or what? Is,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
So we considered a number of different technical transmission network solutions. Broadband over power lines is like it sounds. Unfortunately, it's technically incompatible with our power system and most of North America's, so we had to write that off. DSL, or digital subscriber loop, is providing the internet over copper phone wires, but it can't meet the federal minimum standards without a costly infrastructure development. Also, it's being phased out across the country. The lack of DSL is also part of what is overlooked when it comes to using things like direct satellite TV. Those providers actually use DSL on one of their loops. So my house, for example, I could get satellite TV, but I can't use them to get the internet because there isn't DSL. DSL isn't deployed throughout the county as much as we tend to think. 4G, the next one up from 3G, can meet the federal minimum standards, but it needs intensive deployment. It's not here at all in Tompkins County, even though it's advertised as such. And the carriers are not likely to expand from currently covered areas. So we still have the same issue of more rural areas not getting it. When it comes to fiber and coax, coaxial cable, it's really nice, it's fast, it's reliable, but it's also very expensive. You're looking at installation costs from $25,000 to $60,000 per mile. When you work, there's a form of it that's a hybrid with fiber, hybrid with coaxial. And what that is where you use fiber from central hubs to distribution points, or central facilities rather, to distribution points or hubs. And then from there, they distribute out to the homes or, you know, where the endpoints are. That's how Time Warner works, for example. But the issues there are getting to underserved areas is pricey. So when we saw in Newfield, for example, my understanding is Time Warner won't even look at Newfield. It's just too much that they don't want to bother. And I'll get to why some of that is. The current central system is relatively slow, and it's expensive to upgrade, in part because it requires, when you upgrade, upgrading at the center and at the endpoints. So you have to two sets of equipment that you have to upgrade in terms of the technology. So fixed wireless, the next one, is where the customer's endpoint is a fixed location, like a house, as opposed to a mobile phone. And it's a dedicated connection where it's fiber or wireless from a central office that feeds a wireless distribution point where radio-based connections are used instead of coaxial. And those radio-based hubs are used to reach the end users. Increasing the capacity here over time usually involves adding, not substituting, equipment, and generally doesn't need a change at the end user or at the household. So the result is it's much less expensive, and while there are some spectrum capacity issues, not so much for rural areas like our county, and the capital cost is approximately $300 to $800 per household, as opposed to what we said earlier for $25,000 to $60,000 per mile.
Excuse me, Larry. Is that a one-time?
Okay. So the not hard to guess from that the solution we recommend is fixed wireless delivery. It is substantially lower in cost. Committing to a different higher-end solution may leave us mired with an outdated technology in the future. It is very deployable, very stable, and the upgrades are easier, more cost-effective to do. You can be more nimble as technology grows and increases, and it's supportable. So it enables us, we believe, to achieve our goal of universal access now at moderate costs and preserves options for future upgrades. When we look at funding, because none of this stuff is free, we investigated a number of ways to fund the initiative, and we found that there's a number of opportunities, but there's lots of ambiguity. When it comes to local funding, this is detailed much more in the report, but it's likely that it'll need a lot of political will and understanding that broadband is an economic and a societal necessity. When you look at federal programs, federal and state programs, there's a number of programs, but there's limited incentive for commercial providers. Some of the programs there include the Rural Utility Service, which is a subsection of the Department of Agriculture, the Universal Service Fund, Frank, and the Appalachian Regional Commission. What we found is there's no silver bullet. The key thing is it's important to be ready when the funding opportunities come along. And what we found is that when you wait, you can miss them because you're not ready to respond adeptly to the different programs that might be out there. So we looked at a number of organizational and operational models. We ruled out the single commercial provider because what happens, it happened with a number of us on the committee, is when what we found is that the commercial providers have a very short return on investment scenario that they look at. They want to recover their costs within the first year. So in my case, for example, what they do is they put that burden right on the end user. So in my house, they said, well, you're this far from the next Time Warner link up, so you can pay, or I can pay, for the cable to be run to my house at $10,000. So there's just not enough incentive for commercial providers. There are three other broad categories of governance models that can work. Each has its own issues. You can incorporate broadband initiative into county departments. High startup costs can impact the budget, however. Can create a public authority or municipal utility. The advantage is it's separate from a city budget, but it does require enabling legislation, and it makes the state your partner. Can incorporate a nonprofit or look at public and private funding. Public-private model is more favored for funding, and the combinations tend to enable commercial providers to go where they otherwise wouldn't. We did not come to a single position on which governance model will be the most advantageous. I think we need to be nimble with it. This just shows that when there's more providers, it tends to lower the cost to the consumers. I'm moving quickly because we're running out of time. This shows that there's the deployment of broadband and how it's becoming more important in rural areas. And this brings us to the next steps. We've seen that there are a lot of programs and funds to stimulate broadband programs, much of which went to commercial providers. We believe that we have the expertise in the county to launch broadband initiative. In fact, many on our committee are quite capable. In the short term, our committee can communicate to community and define milestones, monitor progress, etc. It is clear to us that substantial planning and support are necessary. We have missed some opportunities because the expertise and the fiscal resources had not been mobilized and ready. So what we think is that a business plan should be developed and put in place, even as a draft, so when the right funding opportunity comes along, the county is ready to move forward quickly and apply. So I'm just the front person. Many of the people put this together. I think I was the one who was the least shy. We're open to questions and answers, but I also want to make sure that there's many people in our committee who have a lot more information than I do. I can say that this is a great committee to work on. It was a really interesting charge. We have covered a lot. I suggest that many of the things that I just glanced on, you know, you can digest them in the report. But we looked at what our objective was, the process we went through, what we found, what definition of broadband is, the technical solutions, how our recommendation, our recommendation for which technical solution and how to fund it and possible next steps. So, with that, I want to thank everybody and open the floor to questions. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Larry. And I want to first just thank all, before Pat comes to the microphone, because I want to thank you, too. This is a tremendous piece of work for us. We have been struggling and, you know, floundering, honestly, with this issue, knowing it was a critical issue for our residents, for businesses in Tompkins County, for students, for physicians and other medical professionals, et cetera. And I'm just, you know, this is so important that you've digested this material, that you've created this report for us. So I thank all of you who are here tonight and the folks who didn't make it. Pat and Dave, this is tremendous. I mean, I know there was a tremendous amount of material to try to get your arms around. Paula and Marcia, I know your work in supporting the committee and moving it along and writing the report were all extremely critical in this. And Andrea Gibbs, as Pat, as you mentioned, was essential to holding all this together. I also want to thank Rick Dietrich, who was such a pain in the you-know-what for, you know, several years before this, before we got going on this. It says, come on, when are you going to do something? And frankly, Rick, that's exactly what your residents needed. That's what all of us needed. and I really appreciate it. So thank you all very much.
I don't know if anyone has any questions you'd like to ask. I think we have a minute or two if you do. But I'd also like to point out that this is truly a committee effort in writing this report. This is not the kind of thing that we did all the research, then we handed it off to someone to write the report. This report was written by any number of people on the committee. It was read and reviewed by the committee. It was edited by members of the committee. And as you can well imagine, that's probably a much more difficult way to do it than had just one person done it by themselves. So I really wanted thank all of you that are on the committee again. But I also want to point out that when we pulled it all together at the end, we couldn't have done that without Marcia and her wonderful editing skills and her willingness to take a fresh eye look at what our product had been and make sure that we brought it up to the kind of publication standards that the county expects. So thank you, Marcia.
All right. I saw Will and Pam and Carol.
You've given the thanks. The only thank I would add is to all of you for sitting through this very, very long and unusual meeting. That you've created such a very readable and useful report is just very much appreciated. I did have a question, though, which is you said that you made no attempt to make cost estimates, and I understand that you don't want to be locked down to end anything that would be, you know, you haven't done the research, but I had no sense of even magnitude of what we're talking, and I was just wondering if you would care to share some sense of what it would take to follow through on what you're proposing.
The closest that we came, and if anyone from the committee would like to jump in here, just come right up to that microphone in the back, okay? The closest that we came were those figures that we gave you per household that...
unserved household, or we're talking the whole county?
This is for every unserved household. In order to bring service to that household, that the figures that are in the report are the figures that we have come up with. I do know that just an informal conversation, I've been part of conversations where if we were to go with the fiber option, which is not the option we've recommended, but is the more expensive option, we may be talking anywhere from $9 to $14 million to run cable to the rest of the county that doesn't run fiber to the rest of the county that doesn't currently have it. And the other thing I just wanted to point out, we've talked quite a bit about this idea of it not being commercially viable to reach these places. This is the primary reason that it's not, is because the commercial providers have such a short return on investment period. And one of the reasons why some other group, whether it's a private-public partnership or whatever kind of governance model we might choose to go with, might be able to afford to do things that the private commercial providers don't do, is that we could look at a different length of return on investment and plan accordingly. But their return on investment period is very, very short, and they're not willing to run that fiber to anybody that is not within their, you know, distance that they're willing to provide.
Thank you.
Pam.
Yeah, I had a question about the revenue solutions, the options you came up with there. And you said that you didn't come up with a recommendation. Is that because you couldn't agree on one, or you just decided not to try and come up with an opinion on that?
No, it's because there was no single solution. It was a very it wasn't that we didn't want to. It's when we looked at it that there was no single solution that would cover everything. It really depended on a number of other variables that were sort of predecessors. Gary?
Yeah, I'll speak to that because I wrote this section.
Gary, yeah, if you could go to the mic.
The reason we didn't come up with a recommendation is because it'll be a target of opportunity when the decision is made to move forward. About a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, there was tons of stimulus money rolling around. Now there isn't. One of the main impediments to state or federal funding as it stands now is they're going by the map that says we've got four households that aren't served instead of the map, this purple map that you see, which really is closer to reality. So rather than make a recommendation, we thought, you know, let's give a sense of the options. Some of them will take a lot more political will than others. Applying for a grant doesn't take much political will. Issuing a bond or raising a tax does. So we didn't feel that the time was right. You know, when this body decides, okay, let's implement this, then we can look at what's available and say, okay, we got a commercial partner. We don't. We have matching funds. We don't. It was just difficult to make a recommendation at this point. We didn't really have a target to hit.
I think the other thing we talked. Go ahead, Herb.
Another issue is that there's not a single solution for all of the areas that are unserved. So some of the areas may require a different technical or economic solution than the other areas. So there's not a single county-wide solution. You kind of have to tailor as you move forward. There's different challenges, both geographic and technical, and so there's different solutions for each area.
Thank you. All right, I have Carol, Frank, Dooley, and then Peter.
Yeah, I would also like to echo. I felt really privileged to get to attend some of your meetings, and I was really sorry that, as the fall went on, that the press of other business that I couldn't keep attending. What a brilliant, brilliant room full of people dedicated and willing to put in an awful lot of time and effort. I have actually three questions, but I don't necessarily need the answers all now. And if there's things maybe the committee would want to consider how it's moving forward within the future or getting back to us. One, or you can answer them now. One is, as I left was when that discrepancy between the state or federal numbers and ours came up, and have we had any follow-up or do we plan for any follow-up? Do you need anything from the legislature to move us forward with making sure that those numbers get corrected? Because, I mean, I heard the presentation. It was just appalling, their methodology and their conclusions about what we have or don't have here. I wanted to know some more about whether it was sort of
how much unanimity there was on the committee about the decision to recommend a particular technology, where it's, you know, was that a difficult decision, and if so, what maybe came in second, and then thirdly, if we're asking to be proceed with a business plan, would accepting that business plan tie us into that particular methodology, or as federal money in particular, because there's a lot of discussion on the federal level about making more opportunity available, would having our own business plan tie us into what we've recommended and make us less nimble about applying in any way?
I think if I might take a stab at that, Carol, you put your finger exactly on what some of the issues are that we were trying to deal with in coming up with a recommendation, one of which is that this is a field that's changing all the time, and anything that we do today might be eclipsed by something that happens in the very near future or further out. That's why we tried to lay out part of the reason we decided to lay out a number of options so that the county could think about those options, and whatever business plan we come up with, I think that there are certain kinds of information and there are certain elements of a business plan that we need to be ready to go forward with if funding opportunities come along. And simply because we have a plan that we develop perhaps at this time doesn't mean that we wouldn't be able to flex it or to work with it or to change it somewhat depending on what those opportunities are or on what other kinds of technologies might come online going forward. But if we don't have anything to start, we end up where we did with the application for the Google funding, that we have to start from scratch. And even though Paula did a heroic effort, we just could not compete with communities that were already further ahead of us in being ready. So I think it's a tricky balance, but that's what we have to aim for, to be as ready as we can with all the information that we can in the form of a well-developed business plan, but at the same time be able to flex that plan depending on the current events at the time. So, and in terms of the decision-making on the committee, I think we operated in a very, first of all, a very collegial way. I think we worked very, very hard to come to consensus. If anyone on the committee disagrees with this, please feel free to stand up and say so. But I can't think of any of the decisions that we didn't come together as a group and support by the time we finished discussing them. We spent an awful lot of time in meetings discussing them, and there was a lot of discussion that took place on our listserv. So it wasn't a matter of this is our first choice, second choice, and third choice. I think we all came together and supported this.
Frank.
Oh, thanks, Martha. Pat, this is, and Larry, this really is a good starting point. It really is. The report really capsulizes a lot of stuff, even though some of us just got it tonight. I really want to go back to the Universal Service Fund for a second. This board probably ad nauseum has heard me talk about it at least for the last 10 years. At the time that we started, the fund was set up so that communication companies, principally telephone companies, could recapture some of the cost of what it was that it cost them to bring phone access for four of those five items into a community that's served by the purple areas. We are still paying on your phone bills. We're still paying a percentage. And the phone companies are still collecting it, even though some of the technology has changed. So in the next iteration, I really would urge getting it, and we have books out here that we spent a lot of time putting together to show how little this county and the state as a whole has enjoyed getting money back from the Universal Service Fund and the FCC. At the time that we did the original look, there were 11,000 hookups in this county, and we estimated that we were kicking in about $2 million a year, and we were getting back something like $1,500. So that should be one of the items on that funding stream or scheme that you look at, particularly now that the feds have added broadband as a fifth leg of that stool. I'm not giving up on that. We've gotten some dribbles of money, but we're entitled to a lot more.
Well, I totally agree with you, Frank, and I don't know if any of you have been following in the media, but there has been some discussion. The Congress is right now taking a look at the Universal Service Fund in terms of repurposing part of that money for broadband.
Right.
So that's something that we're following very closely. I think you've also touched on something else I wanted to mention, and that's that I want to make sure you all understand that the members of this group are willing to continue with this work, almost to a person. There was one person who, for personal reasons, doesn't feel that they can continue, but most of us on the committee would like very much to be able to continue working with the county to try to find a way to move this forward.
Great.
Dooley.
I really appreciated the relative brevity of the written report. It was very clear. It seemed to mention everything that we needed to hear. So thank you for presenting it in as few pages as possible. Tonight's slides added some things that weren't in the written report, and I want to ask you a question. A few slides back, there's a bar chart that's kind of orange-colored, which in the paper handout I can't read. And it's having multiple providers, the price comes down. That's not a surprise. But when are those numbers from, and to where do they apply?
Could you hear her?
Could you say that again, Dooley? I couldn't quite hear you.
Where do these numbers come from?
The bar chart on the left, yeah. What year does that refer to? Is it a specific part of our country, or what is that supposed to convey to me?
I don't know the answer to the source right now. The way I took it when I read it was that it just shows how the price drops. Broadband is well, you know, it's not always the case, but I'm sure we could find out more and get back to you with that.
Well, then, on the right side of that same page is something that sounds much more intriguing because it costs even less, shows a student getting what he needs. Where is that possible?
That was taken, I believe, from an article that was talking about Frank's question, the Universal Service Fund, and the reprogramming of that money. But if Congress moves forward as we're thinking they will, that this is part of the way that they plan to do that is by making that money available to people who now are not served and are low income.
So that's just hypothetical.
No, that's actually happening right now. There's in many urban areas, Comcast was the first one, but there's other telecommunication companies that have been offering this very affordable, low-priced, high-speed internet, and that's been as of about June of last year.
That's reasonable.
As far as the bar chart on the right, I can't tell you exactly which one, but if you look at the appendices at the back of the report, we have a very long list of references that were used, and this is from one of those references, and I should have been able to tell you, but I'm sorry I can't.
That's okay. Those are relatively unimportant questions. I was just curious. Thanks.
Her.
I'd just like to add on the 995 setup. That's what needs tested or done for existing infrastructure.
Yeah.
There's no new connections.
Yeah.
The companies are dropping the price because their fees are being subsidized by one form or another, but they're not making any new investment with the money that they're saving.
Okay, thank you.
So this is the issue. We're talking about trying to get to people who don't have it at all.
I've got Peter, Jim, Brian, and I have a question, too.
I have a question. Something intrigued me that you said is that they want their investment paid back in a year. And, of course, that sounds really good. I can imagine they'd like it even better if it was paid back in a month. But the issue is, how do you establish a time? And when I was thinking about it, it seems to me that roughly there's a guide, which is how long, if you put a capital investment in, the question is how long is that going to be able to service you? And it has to be paid off in a time that sort of is consistent with that, and then in addition to that, you get your standard profit. And I was wondering, could it be that 1 year payback is because this technology changes in such a dynamic way that actually 1 year is more or less all you can count on in getting, or some number like that, in getting service out of an investment that you make? Is that the reason for it? In which case, it's not crazy.
No.
Okay.
That was one of the questions that I was focused on. When we asked some of the providers who came in about that, they were almost shocked when we asked about why don't you look at 2-3 years. They expect that to, you know, a year is actually me rounding it. They expect from the time they turn on your service that they're profitable. That's just the models that they use. And they don't look at it at all from what we've found as any sort of an infrastructure investment. It's use what they have, and the technology, the time frame that things change in terms of technology upgrades isn't impacting the charge of the infrastructure cost directly to the end user.
So that must mean after they paid it back, they're making profits of 50% or something like that.
Yep.
Peter.
The question comes up. Why isn't there competition? Usually when that happens, you find some other producer who finds that it's worthwhile to, they can still make money by making a lower rate. Why doesn't that work?
Well, there has been some, and some of the members can speak a little bit more with, I can't think of the name of it, with Verizon service. That was part of it. And there was some discussion about how Verizon wasn't recouping or hasn't been recouping for their Fios service. Their expenses, and some of the other providers said they don't understand how they can offer it at the prices they are, which was also speculated as to why they may not be rolling it out as much as they advertise. But there is competition, but it's within their industry. Once you start making that kind of profit, there's not the perceived need to give it up.
Jim and Brian.
Lee Shurtleff is here, and I'm guessing that's not a coincidence. We have a $20 million system that we just put up, and if someone can educate me quickly, how would we use that in relation to what we're all talking about here today? We have wonderful towers and things like that.
I'll give it a shot, Jim.
Thank you.
There's a lot of variables that would go into this. Let me start by saying that much of the emphasis on public safety communications or the future of it, where it's going, is on the same subject, broadband. A lot of issues going on at the federal level that are tied to money, spectrum, how to get it out there into a mobile environment. So I'm very pleased to see the report, and I'm struck by a lot of the similarities that we've gone through in building the county's public safety voice radio communications system. We're at the same answer. Fixed wireless is where we're going to have to head. The other thing I'm struck by in this report are the areas that appear in the gap map, and that's something we've been looking for and trying to figure out for a significant amount of time. And it's probably no coincidence that we were forced to invest significant county money out in many of these same areas that are painted purple because we had no other facilities, no private interests, nobody we could partner with to extend that coverage. Point being, there are some very strong potentials if we wanted to get down that line where the system may be able to be leveraged. Caution is it's a spectrum driven. It would require some backup along the lines of being able to build out fiber. We've got some estimates. We looked at one time where we would use fiber rather than the microwave radio. there are some significant areas that I think that in the next evolution of your committee, Pat, that we would be able to offer and bring along. But this gap map is invaluable and something that we haven't been able to put together in the past.
I'd like to credit Chuck Bartosz and his crew for the work that produced this gap map. They put many, many hours into it. They actually had to go out physically into the field and do a lot of field work to determine these points.
Brian.
It's kind of on the same subject, but as you folks move forward and start looking for different funding sources, particularly grants and things of that nature, is the wild differentiation between what the state says is areas not being covered and what we believe to not be covered, is that going to affect our ability to apply for those grants? And if so, how do we rectify that?
Well, we haven't really spent time talking about that on the committee, so I can only speak for myself on this, Brian. But I think we do need to think about that and talk about it some more. But surely we're not the only county in New York State that is running up against this same problem. Oh, sure. And just as we have with other issues, I think we might very well want to talk to our colleagues in other places and see if there is, perhaps by working jointly, we can talk to the state and show them and demonstrate to them why there are such differences between the map they've come up with and our gap map. And I think that needs to be part of our next steps in our effort. They explained to us when they came down and talked to us that it's the first time they've tried to do anything like this. And so they were a little bit, they didn't exactly apologize, but they acknowledged the fact that there were shortcomings to the work that they had done. So I think if we were able to put together a well thought out and professional kind of presentation, I think it would be worthwhile to talk to the state about our findings. Not only for us, but for other parts of the state as well.
My impression from when they came was they were very receptive when we pointed out how incorrect they were. And it was almost, the way they talked about it was, well, we had this Herculean task, and we needed to adopt a methodology. And this is the one we did, and we at least followed it through. That was kind of their approach. Their methodology was by census block, which really, you can see the difference. So at the meeting, after they presented to us and we got into discussion, Chuck was the first one to his feet to start pointing out things. And they knew about Chuck, and there's credibility. And there was a receptiveness that I recall where they said, excuse me, if you've got other ways to show us and you can back it up, then great. So it's not sort of their map or nothing, was the impression that I had.
Just to clarify a little bit, if a census block had one person serviced in that census block, then the entire service block was covered, okay? And that makes for a huge error.
So that goes to my question, which was, I think those two maps should go up on the homepage of the county, homepage with an explanation of what they are. And I noticed, as Julie said, that a number of things are in the PowerPoint that aren't in the full report. Could the PowerPoint also be put on the website so people can have both?
That's okay. Only up to the county. So.
Okay, and then maybe at least that map added into the full report. That's a critical issue. This came up at the Southern Tier Regional Economic Development Council when we did have a proposal in there for broadband, but when they came back using that kind of data on the left, it just didn't look like there was a great deal of need in the Southern Tier. So there's a new round of funding applications for June or July. That's a whole other topic. I hope maybe this will give us the brace of information to put together an application through that process. and, you know, and maybe get somewhere with this.
See, in the urban areas, it's much more accurate to say if there's even one person served in a census block, then everybody in the census block has service. But it's certainly not true in the more rural areas.
Anyone else? Well, again, thanks to the whole committee, and apologies to Jim Blizzard and crew. We went over the time for your break, but I think it was important to keep going all the way through this conversation. This has been a tremendous addition to our knowledge base, and we can't thank you enough. So, oh, Dave, go ahead.
I'd just like to personally thank all the committee members for all the support and all the hours. Did a heck of a job. Thank you very much.
I'd like us now to take a 10-minute recess. I want to say I've been asked that the recesses be 10 minutes and not 5 because some people have to go all the way down to the end of the hallway for the restroom. If we can really be back in our seats at 5 of, then that'll work. Thank you.